equal and fair are not always the same thing. And a remote team and an in-office team, don't trick yourself into thinking that they're the same. They're not. And you shouldn't spend all your energy on trying to make them equal.
Welcome to Mastering Remote, the podcast that gives you expert advice to help you work smarter and manage better remotely. I'm your host, Christine Orchard, head of marketing at ARC. In today's episode, I'll be talking to Chris Nguyen, the CEO of Creative Market. We cover how to transition a hybrid team to fully remote, how to get buy-in from your team during periods of transition, or what to do when people don't buy in, and how focusing on meaningful work can help you build stronger connections in your remote team. Let's get started. Really excited to have you here, Chris.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Creative Market does?
Yeah, so we're a marketplace for design assets. We've got things like fonts, illustration, typical customers for us, professional designers, marketers, entrepreneurs. And really what we're about is just helping design projects go faster, help you skip some steps so that your work looks really great at the end.
I know you began your career as an engineer, then became CTO, and now you're the CEO of Creative Market. Can you tell us about that journey?
I never know how to explain the story, but when I got to Creative Market, I was always really focused on just what can I do for this company. I loved working there, still love working there, and engineering was what I did early on. But along the way, the company had new challenges developing engineering management as a practice, scaling engineering teams. I was always there to just kind of help however I could. And so many years later, one of our co-founders decided he needed a kind of a next chapter in his life, and Creative Market needed a next chapter too. And he was really, really supportive of me, and the board ended up selecting me as CEO. And it was an intense period of challenges and growth. But I think when you've got those opportunities, even if they're a little scary sometimes, you got to run toward them. So it's been kind of a wild ride. I don't look back a whole lot, but every so often I kind of catch my breath and just think about it. And it's, it's been wild.
I'm really interested to dig into how you actually went from a hybrid team. You had people in an office and some people working remotely. How did you actually make that transition as a leader?
Yeah, it was like a week one decision, right? I had been remote, I'd been in the office. And what I saw happening over time was I felt like there were two cultures developing, kind of two creative markets. And I wanted to pick a lane. We'd had a lot of internal discussion about which lane to pick, and we were kind of stuck on the decision. And when I became CEO, I decided week one, we're going to go all remote. Most of the team was remote. It was just a small pocket that was in the office, and I really want to go for that lane. One of the most important things is we were just honest with the team. We said, this is the decision we've made. This is why we've made it. This is what it means for you. And we were really open. We said, this is not going to work for everyone. That's okay. Come talk to us. It doesn't have to be a scary topic, but this is why we are doing this, and this is who we are. And I think if you're really clear about what the decision is and you're clear about why you're making the decision, teams, they can agree or not agree, but I think they at least respect where you're coming from as a leadership team. And we'll never look back because we love remote. We believe in remote. I think everyone's super happy that we went that path.
Do you think you manage team members differently? For example, was it harder for you to get buy-in from in-office team members versus remote ones?
Yeah, I think it naturally happens that you treat teams differently, whether you realize it or not. I'm borrowing from our COO, Priya Kattari, here, but the thing that she always pointed out was equal and fair are not always the same thing. And a remote team and an in-office team, don't trick yourself into thinking that they're the same. They're not. And you shouldn't spend all your energy on trying to make them equal. If you're on a remote team, you're not going to get to go to the movie theater Thursday night with the team or that walk to get lunch. You miss out on those opportunities, but the in-office team misses out on opportunities that are unique to remote too. And I think it's all about realizing what those differences are and then managing for it. One of the things that we think a lot about is empathy and EQ. A lot of the times what companies do is they'll say, okay, we're going to have this remote product team or this remote engineering team, but leadership's going to be in the office or the managers are here. And when your managers, when your leadership team doesn't have the same sort of lived working experience as some of the employees, they're going to be at a disadvantage managing those people and setting up the culture the right way. And so even before we went all remote, we always had leadership part remote, part not, managers part remote, part not. And I think that builds those empathy muscles that are really, really important. And if you miss that, very subtle things can start to break in your culture over time.
If you think back to when you first transitioned from a hybrid team to a fully remote one, what did you do in those first 30 days?
Well, we were starting from scratch in a lot of ways. It was a big moment for the company because Creative Market just had so much success for so many years. And we were getting to a period where we had to rethink a lot of things because the thing that got you there isn't always the thing that's going to bring you to the next stage. And we had to be really honest with the team that we needed to evolve the culture. We wanted to get much better about direct feedback. We wanted to really raise our bar even higher than it had been before and really double down on our team talent and our expectations and go for a bigger goal. And there was a lot of work to do around the culture, around how the company was growing. I think we had been growing, but not always in a very healthy way for the long term. And so, again, it was just about being really clear about why we're making certain decisions. And, you know, it took some trust on part of the team. If you were on the team at that period, it's like, whoa, new CEO, we're going all remote. You know, we're kind of rethinking our culture. We've got new core values all of a sudden, these core values that we had had for years, all of a sudden there's new ones. What does it mean for me? How is this place I love changing? Is the change good or bad? And you had to have a little bit of faith that the leadership and the company was going to take it to the right place. Now, when we look back on the last couple of years, I think a lot of employees would say, this is the best version of Creative Market we have ever had. We're growing, we're profitable, culture's really healthy, feedback's really healthy. But at that time, in that window of change, there were no guarantees that it was going to turn out that way. And so, again, I think it's just about being very clear and then focused on the goal. Where are you trying to get to? And are you seeing evidence that you're heading in the right direction?
It's interesting you talk about core values because, you know, a lot of companies, they have these core values on their website somewhere. How did you go from having those abstract concepts to actually showing that this is what you live on a day-to-day basis?
I think something companies miss sometimes is core values have to really mean something. And it's not you say it means something and therefore it means something. It has to mean something to you as a leader, as the author of the values. And you know, one of our values internally is say the thing. If you're feeling something, maybe you're in a critique session and some work is just not right. It's not there yet. And you know, it's not there yet. Say it, like, just say it. Be honest and direct with people in service of the work, not to be mean to people, not to be disrespectful, but in service of the work. And so what you have to do when we brought out say the thing, one, it was very intentional. It was meant to change something about our culture. Two, we said, this is what it is, and this is what it isn't. What it is being very direct and honest and open. What it is not is being mean or a jerk, right? So you set up that framework, and then the thing you have to do, and this is why I say it's important that it means something to you. You got to live it. You got to live it, and you have to model it. One of the reasons say the thing is a value of ours is because it's a value of mine. It's a personal value. I'm very direct and I believe in being direct. And so every day at the company, I'm modeling that and I'm making it okay for people to do that same thing. And that's how cultures change when you just see it all the time.
Do you have any examples of people who just didn't buy into this? What was that whole process like?
A couple people did leave and I think the thing is, culture comes from people. Every hire you make, every employee that stays another year and they're still up for the ride, that's how your culture gets developed. And while we appreciate all the work that those people did, they had been at Creative Market for a long time, but they needed a change and we needed the change too, because if we're expressing this is what the company is now. This is who we are. This is what we're trying to do. If people opt out of that, that's not a bad thing. It's so long as everyone feels mutual respect in that process, that it's not a scary topic, that you can talk openly about it. I think that's a really good thing. I think change at a company is a really important thing to keep it healthy. And what it does is it lets you know that for the 90% of the people that stick around, you know, you've got a team that is, if not fully bought in, at least they're on board to make it work and to give it a try. Whether you're a manager or a leader or a peer who is seeing the team around you change, what you have to know is those moments are not bad moments, and they can feel like it in the moment, but it's actually something really healthy that's happening, so long as you've got the right goals in mind.
How did you deal with pushback from team members who maybe didn't buy into all of these cultural changes happening around them?
All we could do at the moment was express who we are and what we're trying to do. I don't think we ever explicitly said, if this place isn't for you, get out. It wasn't like that. It was more like, this is what we are, and we're going to work every day going in this direction. And the thing we did too is we set up the expectation of feedback and of change. And it gives us the license to point at a situation and say, hey, this is not us. This is us. We got to do this instead. I think one thing, though, is to normalize change. That's something that we talked a lot about in the early days of my tenure. There were times when people would leave, and because it felt like such a family and a small startup, it's like, oh my gosh, someone's leaving. And it felt like this huge moment. And what we work to do as a leadership team is just to normalize change. And if someone would leave or move on to another opportunity, we had the same playbook every time. We were even in our emotion. We thanked them. We appreciated them. And it was just a simple email update. Here's something at the company that changed. Because we didn't want it to feel like a big moment. Because the truth is, and the thing that we were trying to get the team acclimated to, things change all the time. Companies are always changing. So it's not like, oh, this thing's not going to happen again. It'll be okay. It's, yeah, this thing's going to happen. And thankfully, we've got a really strong culture. We're really good at hiring. We're prepared for these things. It's no big deal. And we wish someone a lot of luck, and they're going to do awesome things somewhere else. And that's, again, that's a healthy thing, as long as you don't overreact to it.
You know, it's really healthy to let people know that it's not an emotional, oh man, someone's leaving, but oh, it's a normal part of life here. After you became CEO and took the company fully remote, how did your hiring process change?
We had started this sort of journey of really upping our hiring game even before I was CEO. It was something that when I was CTO, I cared a lot about, our COO cared a lot about. It was something she and I worked on quite a bit. I think we're always trying to take things up another level. So even when I say we're really good at hiring, there's always something you can do to get better. I think the things that we look for are, we want people who are collaborative. We want people who get excited about cross-discipline collaboration. That's something Creative Market does a lot. If you're an engineer on our team, you are not there just to bang out code and put your headphones on and go away. Sometimes you have to do that, and that's okay. But you're going to work really closely with product people and designers, and you're going to have to think about our support team, who will be on the front lines of dealing with whatever feature ships downstream, and work with them to understand, hey, I'm building this thing. How does this impact you guys? And we keep an eye out for collaboration. And I think it's especially important with a remote company. You've got to over communicate. You can't just hide and like be invisible, because you don't get those serendipitous social interactions that you would get in office. So that's one thing we keep an eye out for, but there's a lot to hiring and doing it right.
Do you personally have a favorite interview question that you like to ask candidates?
I think the important thing with interview questions is to have a framework, to have them be consistent, and to know why you are asking them. There is an intention to the question. There is a result that comes out of it. I don't know that I've got a favorite, but I think one of our strengths as a team is we're good at individualizing. I think people can answer questions in different ways. The important thing is to keep an eye out for the why. Why are they answering that way? What motivated that type of response? It's not always the content of the answer that is critical. It's understanding a person in their whole. That's hard to do in a compressed interview process. But I think for the most part, there are some skill requirements that matter for a given role. But otherwise, what you're really doing is you're vetting the relationship, because skills change, people grow, companies change, product initiatives change. There's all those things changing. But the core of it is, are we going to have mutual respect for each other? Are we going to be able to communicate in a way that's really healthy? Most of that other stuff, if you've got the bedrock of the relationship, most of that other stuff can change and evolve and grow. But if the relationship doesn't have that foundation, those are harder things to solve later. So we spend a lot of time thinking about that.
So I'm really interested in this talk that I watched you do. It was on YouTube of you at a conference a few years ago. It was called Hiring Your Dream Team. You talked about how your process of interviewing candidates is actually you pitching to them. Is that something you're still doing now?
Yeah, that's one thing that's different is if I'm involved in the hiring process, I tend to come in at the end. What I've focused on over the last couple of years is hiring an executive team. It's maybe more habit or just how more I see the world than anything, but I've always looked at it as, yes, there are things to vet in a hiring process, compensation, skills, experience, et cetera, et cetera, a whole set of things that you're looking for. But what it really comes down to is, here's why we do what we do. Here's our challenge. The reason why we need this role is because we have this really big challenge in front of us. And then the third part is, here's why you are uniquely qualified to help us overcome that challenge, and we need you. Now, you've got to vet all those other things before you go into pitch mode. I think it's really unhealthy when companies, they're like pitch heavy through the whole process. And then if things don't work out, it's actually a really unfair candidate experience. But once you're really set and committed to making a hire, and you know that they are the person that you want to add to the team, I think people want to feel like they're doing important work. And if they're not doing important work for your company, like, why are you hiring them anyway, right? And so that's always how I've structured it. It's probably due to other people on the team, because we've got such a great team, but we have a pretty high success rate. And when we send an offer letter out, more often than not, they're signing. We've been really lucky over the last few years to get really good people.
That's awesome. It sounds like storytelling is a really natural part of your whole process. I really like that. So you talked a bit about over-communication at the beginning of our chat. And a lot of remote work experts say that that's one of those critical components of any successful remote team, over-communicating. Was there anything in particular, such as processes, that really worked well for your team?
We look for a certain amount of maturity in communication. For example, an engineer who shows up mid-project and says, hey, this deadline's not working, folks. We got some problems. That's appreciated a lot. That's not a mistake. That's a really good quality to just own it and see the problem and then speak up. I think in a lot of fields, sometimes people are just so intent on doing good work, they forget to talk about the work. We look for that. We reference check. We listen for stories where there's evidence of that happening. We look for people who are humble. I've been lucky. I've had a good ride over the last 7 years. It doesn't mean I'm perfect. Doesn't mean I don't screw up. So we really look for people that can own that, you know, double A plus grades. If at the beginning of the project, you're like, I've seen this before. There's no way this project plan's working. So we love that. We love the communication. I think another thing with remote is it is still important to know people and to meet them in person. And obviously right now it's challenging to do this, but we still do team trips. We still meet each other in person. And I've observed before the quality and the frequency of the Slack communications between two individuals, it really goes up dramatically if they have met in person and talked about things that have nothing to do with work, right? So I always tell remote companies that too. You can build this remote culture, but let's be honest, it matters to know people and to share space together. And it doesn't mean you have to do it every day, but you've got to be intentional about that too.
Before this year, how often did you meet in person altogether?
We usually do a couple team trips a year, and that looks like a week in a city. We were going to San Diego a couple trips in a row, and we try to make it feel really different from the day to day. We don't do long all-day sessions. We have two-hour lunch breaks. We tell people, go walk, get out of here. We try to do a lot of interactive things, so we try to make it feel just very different. Our roadmaps change. We get away from the normal work and just kind of remember we're people. It's not just work.
I've heard many leaders say that they're afraid of the transition from in-office to remote simply because they're going to lose those moments of human connection. Is there anything you did to help foster those moments of human connection, especially when you first started making the transition?
I think that what wins the day still is doing meaningful work. So yes, we have all hands. Yes, we have lunch and learns. Yes, we have Slack culture. We've got goofy gifts. We do things at the company called out of context quotes. So whenever someone says something just uniquely bizarre, if all context is removed from that statement, we tag it in Slack and keep it in a channel. And then we come back to the quotes later and we kind of do like a little game show of like, who said this ridiculous thing that makes no sense? So we have all that. It's a lot of fun. But what wins the day is doing meaningful work. If you're a product designer and you are working on helping to solve a problem and create an interaction, you've brought it a certain percentage of the way, but you know inside it just needs something more. It needs something else. And you get that wonderful moment in that critique session and someone tells you, I like this, but I don't think it's ready. Here's a bunch of things I think. And you spend the day, maybe you go for a walk and it's sort of rattling around in your brain and you got that feedback. And then you have the light bulb because you got away from work and away from Figma or whatever. And you have that aha moment of how you're going to solve it. And you rush back to your computer and you build the thing and it's great. And you show it to the team and it really is great. And it goes out to the world. Those moments, even if they are remote, those are still things you can feel as a human being. Those wonderful moments are absolutely possible with a remote culture, but the core of it has to be really healthy. Do you have a culture where people are doing meaningful work, where there is feedback, where people are giving each other mutual respect? If you've got the seed of that and the center of it, you can make remote work, you can make in-person work, you can work in an RV. Like anything is possible if the company's really healthy. And I think those serendipitous moments will just happen naturally because people will find the humanity to each other through their work and through their shared experiences. And then all the other stuff, it just happens naturally. I always tell people, if you are trying to force certain moments or trying to squeeze in culture moments, you might be doing it wrong.
So we're going to end with some lighter, fun questions. They're going to be rapid-fire questions, so don't think too hard. Just tell us the first thing that comes to your mind. I've got 5 of these for you. Are you ready?
Yes.
How do you take a break when working from home?
I go for a run. Get outside.
Are you default synchronous or asynchronous communication?
I vastly, greatly prefer synchronous. It is much better for my brain. Can't avoid async, but I'm old school for life.
Who's the most interesting person you follow or podcast that you really like?
Yeah, I love anything Kara Swisher does. I will listen to her all day. She is just a hero in tech, and I think she's wonderful.
What's the one remote work tool you can't live without?
A pen and a piece of paper. I think the thing with remote, you are all digital all the time, on camera, Zoom, video, Slack. I think it's really important just like de-digital, get away a little bit, breathe a bit. I think it's important.
What book has had the greatest impact on you?
I read a book from my childhood, Microsurfs by Douglas Copeland. It is a super 80s, 90s feeling book, but it's all about tech culture, Microsoft, Bill Gates, Seattle, tech in the 90s. It's a really great snapshot, and I actually think it has a lot of lessons that are still relevant today.
Thanks so much for listening to Mastering Remote, a podcast brought to you by Arc. We make it easy for you to hire senior remote developers, pre-vetted and tailor-matched to you. Check us out at arc.dev. If you enjoyed the conversation today, go ahead and subscribe to be the first to know when our newest episodes of Mastering Remote go live. See you next time.